Ladies and gentlemen, our first case for this morning is United States v. Bailey, and we'll hear from Ms. Varney.
Good morning. Sarah Varner for Anthony Bailey. May it please the Court. Mr. Bailey falls within a unique small set of individuals who completed a crime prior to the passage of the Fair Sentencing Act, but who were sentenced after. All of the parties in this case clearly contemplated that the Fair Sentencing Act could have a very significant effect on Mr. Bailey's sentence. In fact, Mr. Bailey was set for sentencing at one point, and the district court vacated the hearing, asking the parties to weigh in on how the Fair Sentencing Act would affect Mr. Bailey. After this court decided the Fisher case, Mr. Bailey proceeded to sentencing. At that point, he signed a plea agreement, which would hold him to a mandatory minimum sentence of 20 years in light of Fisher. Even so, the parties in the plea agreement still contemplated that the Fair Sentencing Act still could have a great impact on his sentence if it was deemed to apply to cases such as Mr. Bailey's, which was the case. After the Supreme Court decided Dorsey in 2012, Mr. Bailey moved the district court to reduce his sentence. The district court was asked to construe the motion under 3582C1B or under Section 2255.
Now, of course, this is a C1 capital C plea agreement.
Yes, Your Honor.
And that does make a difference to one's ability to take advantage of the Fair Sentencing Act.
Your Honor, when the district court ruled under 3582C2, at that point we looked at how the Fair Sentencing Act could be construed under C2. And under C2, we analogized to Freeman. The Freeman case looked at reductions under C2 in cases where there was a binding plea agreement entered. Prior to the Freeman case, those cases had not been eligible for a reduction because the bargains were viewed to have been struck based upon an agreement between the parties and not based upon a guideline range. Analogy to Freeman, but for a Dorsey reduction, we're talking about the statutory mandatory minimum. And in those cases, that the guideline range in those cases under 5G1.1 becomes the guideline sentence. So under C2, there was a way for the district court, which when the district court entered their order ruling under C2, it may be that that's how the district court was looking at the case to get to eligibility, that he could have been eligible because the guideline sentence was now the mandatory minimum sentence. And under
but
Freeman...
But not as a result of any action of the Sentencing Commission, which is what 3582C2 seems to require.
Correct, Your Honor.
So I understand the analogy is a matter of policy arguments. I don't understand how 3582C2 would give the district court authority to grant this relief.
Well, Your Honor, that's exactly why when we asked the district court to grant relief to Mr. Bailey, we asked that the district court look at it under C1B or under 2255 because we faced the same issue. We didn't understand.
C1B doesn't work either.
Well, under
2255 could.
Yes. We asked the district court to look at it under C1B because of the Price case that was decided in Illinois. And in that case, the district court indicated that you could look at the Dorsey case as saying the Supreme Court looked at the language of the FSA and said it is clear that Congress intended for the FSA to apply to cases like Mr. Bailey's, and so that was the express permission that was allowed.
Clear isn't quite the word I would use about that.
Let's see, our vote was 5-5, the Supreme Court's vote was 5-4, correct?
Correct, Your Honor. Okay, so. You are correct, Your Honor. But that was a way that we were asking the district court to look at it in order to avoid having Mr. Bailey spend his 2255 on this particular case. We just wanted a ruling on that, you know, could...
Did you say spend his 2255?
For him to utilize his 2255, which he hadn't yet.
The guy pled guilty an 11C1C plea. What's to debate apart from the Fair Sentencing Act issues?
Our office, when we started looking at the cases under Dorsey, there's been some disagreement around the country about how exactly those cases should be decided. And we thought it best to try at least to proceed under 3582 before moving to 2255.
But the problem with 3582, as Judge Hamilton is just saying, is that neither part of it seems to apply to his situation. Not you agreed, not 3582C2, because it's not the Sentencing Commission, and not C1B. So what's left?
Our perspective on that was that the district court appeared to believe that they did have, that he did have power under C2 to reduce it.
His apparent belief may not be correct when we look at the statute, though. So since we're here,
correct, Your Honor.
What's the statutory answer?
That's why we're asking this court to construe under C1B or under 2250 to at least send it back to the district court and say, Mr. Bailey specifically asked for relief under Dorsey, under 2255, and to send it back and say, what about 2255? We didn't get a ruling on that. We got a form order motion on relief that we didn't ask for.
What I don't understand here, Ms. Varner, is, I mean, I can see how you can get to 2255, maybe. There are still problems with that approach. But I don't understand why this wasn't, in essence, a conditional plea agreement, which could have preserved the right to appeal, particularly since everybody knew the Dorsey-Fisher issue was in play. Right?
There was a specific exemption in the waiver of his appellate rights to pursue this if Dorsey was deemed to, if the Fair Sentencing Act was deemed to apply to his case.
That's different. Well, I mean, what we seem to have here at best from the defense side is an agreement between the government and the defense to keep a door open notwithstanding all of the many legal restrictions that exist on reopening sentences. When a conditional plea agreement with a right to appeal and a timely appeal would have seemed to me to be a very straightforward solution to this problem.
I don't believe at the time Mr. Bailey would have had a timely appeal that the Supreme Court had decided
no,
the case,
but
which would have
we had a lot of, there were a lot of cases in the pipeline, right?
Correct. But that is precisely why defense counsel couldn't have done anything else at that point. All the parties agreed that this could have a very significant impact on his sentence. The judge asked for the parties to look at it. Fisher was decided. Mr. Bailey was sentenced. The parties still said this could significantly impact him, and left aside his ability to come and say, to come back and say, now I'm sentenced at twice the mandatory minimum sentence in this case. And that's exactly what we tried to do.
But the problem is, I have some sympathy for how one weaves through all of this, but there are only so many legal vehicles that are available, and 3582 doesn't seem to be one of them. Had he just taken an appeal for purposes of preserving an argument, people do that all the time, and we say, sure, you know, take your appeal, preserve your argument, go ask the Supreme Court if they're going to do something different, and you know, could have wound up as a hold for Dorsey, maybe, you just don't know. But that doesn't change the language of 3582 to make it suddenly available, given all of the interests in the system and finality.
The plea agreement specifically said that if the FSA were, that he could come back and seek a modification of his sentence, and 3582 is appropriate for a modification.
But can parties override statutes? I mean, you can say he can come back, but how, but there needs to be a vehicle.
We believe that we asked the court to look at C1B. Granted, we had some reservations about whether the court would apply Price.
You're into your rebuttal time now. I just thought I'd tell you.
Yes, Your Honor. And I would like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal, just to say that Mr. Bailey tried in every way that he could to preserve this right, and that's just what we're trying to pursue
okay.
here. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Glickman?
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Barry Glickman. I'm an assistant United States attorney in and for the Southern District of Indiana. I represent the United States here today, and I represented the United States in the district court below. In this case, the defendant, as the court is well aware, entered into a binding plea agreement pursuant to 11C1C and received a contractual sentence.
Could I ask you, though, what in your view did this exemption or exception providing that he could seek to modify his sentence if the SFA later was determined to apply retroactively by either Congress or the Supreme Court. So that's not in most C1C agreed sentences that I've seen. So is it the government's position this is just meaningless, or what do you think that meant?
By virtue of including that, Mr. Bailey's before the court today.
Well, but you're arguing that he shouldn't be, and so I want to know what you think. This was in an agreement, so the government was part of this agreement too.
Absolutely, Your Honor. I'm arguing that the district court was correct in its analysis that the plea under 11C1C forecloses Mr. Bailey receiving any relief under 3582 as the court.
Okay, so I'll accept that that's your position, but I want to know, given that position, what do you think this exception meant? What door did it open for Mr. Bailey that was otherwise closed?
This was a unique time. I've never had or negotiated a C1C agreement when there could be a sea change in law, as this certainly was. I think we all agree that Dorsey was
Overruled a decision of this court. Unfortunately, that's not the only time that's happened.
Well, there are times when that's fortunate.
Well, I wasn't objecting, but I'm just saying it's not, an earth-shattering event. From time to time, we're wrong, at least as our superiors in Washington see things. I'm troubled that your position basically is that this was just a meaningless addition to the plea agreement.
Well, it wasn't a meaningless addition to the plea agreement. It was part of the C1C plea agreement that both the defense and the United States felt was very important to give the defense an avenue for whatever reason in the future that they deemed appropriate to seek relief of this court and possibly the United States Supreme Court.
And what vehicle did the government think was the right one? You've just now said three times, not 3582. So with 3582 as the not vehicle, what was going to be the way that this was going to happen?
Quite honestly, Your Honor, I've never had to put myself in the position of the defense attorney to see what I might argue on appeal if something happened in the future. But to answer the court's question, I don't know what would have been out there. I don't know. It was important to the defense in this case. They asked that it be put in there. I didn't see any harm in putting it in there. In fact, I thought it was overly fair to put it in there, as we try to be fair in each and every case that we do. So because of the tenor of things involving the Fair Sentencing Act, and because of the posture of cases on appeal at the time, we agreed to that term in the binding plea agreement. Whether the defense can make anything of it in the future, that remains to be seen.
Mr. Glickman, I guess I see a couple of different avenues, and I just want to get your reaction to them. One of them is what Judge Wood was describing, namely just take an appeal, ask this court to stay briefing, waiting for a decision from the Supreme Court in Dorsey and Fisher, and that would seem pretty straightforward. Second option would be a 2255 petition, which is a lot less straightforward given the time limits and issues on retroactivity of, for example, a reinterpretation of a statute by the Supreme Court. They hadn't construed it before, but I guess that's how I'm thinking about that, and I don't have a specific question, but I'd be interested in your reaction to those possibilities.
It's an interesting question, Your Honor. Quite honestly, I'm not sure that I have an answer to it. The defense certainly could have taken an appeal and preserved their right to seek redress if the Supreme Court had decided the case as they did. They didn't do that.
So if this is just an unusual way of making it a conditional guilty plea, then I would understand at least an argument from the government that the failure to follow through with an appeal to take advantage of that conditional plea might be the end of things at this point. I mean, my problem, as we all made clear in the opening argument, is how to, you know, squish this case into 3582 somehow.
I understand, Your Honor, and this court was very clear in the Scott opinion that that can't be done, or it's can't shouldn't be done in a case where there's a C1C binding plea agreement that's not linked to a guideline range. In this case, it wasn't, and Mr. Bailey had very compelling reasons for entering into a C1C plea for 240 months. He had two prior felony drug convictions at the time. If that second 851 information was filed, he would have been facing a sentence of mandatory life imprisonment without release. Mr. Bailey also received an incredible benefit of having five substantive counts dismissed because of his bargain. And it seemed at the time, and it certainly seems now, although I understand the defense having buyer's remorse, if you will, but it was a good binding plea agreement and a good contractual sentence for both sides. It seems to be that that's what 11C1C contemplates. Both sides give a little bit, both sides get a little bit, and that's what happened in this case. In any event, under 3582, even if it was available, the court certainly has discretion whether to grant it or not. And Judge Lawrence made an excellent record as to why at the sentencing hearing, and maybe less so in the order that he issued, but he noted that there was a very serious danger to the community, and that's why Mr. Bailey should not have his sentence reduced under 3582, even if it was applicable. I mean, Mr. Bailey had a horrid criminal history. He was on parole for possession of a firearm by a serious violent felon when he committed what was his fifth felony in the instant case. He had been out of prison a grand total of less than 3 months before he committed the offense in this case. And the charge that he was on parole for, possession of a firearm by a serious violent felon, that would occurred as a result of the defendant firing 5 to 6 shots from a .40 caliber semi-automatic handgun to get him to plead. That was the events in that case. So that, coupled with the fact that he also had a prior conviction for intimidation where he threatened to kill a police officer and two prior drug felony convictions, as I noted, Mr. Bailey had good reason to want to enter into a C1C plea agreement. And as I said, it benefited both sides in this case. And because he doesn't have the, he entered into that, and this court's opinion seemed to foreclose him getting any relief under 3582 because Judge Lawrence articulated reasons that would deny him that relief in any event if he were to be able to pursue that, I would respectfully ask this court to affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Quick.
Anything further, Ms. Varner?
I don't want to waste any more time with C2. I know that this court obviously does not believe that was the proper avenue. It's just the way the district court ruled, and it's what we were stuck with, the ruling.
So can I ask you what we should make of the comment of the district court right at the end of his explanation where he says the court does not believe a reduction is appropriate as the nature and seriousness of the danger outweighs the need for a reduction? I mean, that sounds like an original thought, right? He's looking at this now from the point of view, do you deserve something less than the 240 months?
Yes, Your Honor, and that's something that we argued in our brief as well. That statement is not sufficient, we believe, to hold Mr. Bailey to twice his sentence. It is true that the district court did mention his criminal history at the time of the original sentencing, but his criminal history was accounted for at that time in his guideline range. And this court has said that a compelling variance from the guideline needs a compelling justification, and that one bare sentence is not enough to keep him at twice his sentence. But regardless of that, C2 is not the relief that we asked for. So we would ask this court to reverse and remand for resentencing under C2 if this court finds that appropriate, but moreover, to return this case to the district court for a ruling on the relief Mr. Bailey actually requested.
In other words, the 2255 alternative?
C1B or and also 2255.
Okay.
Right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. We will take the case under advisement.